My name is Father C. John McCloskey. I'm the director of the Catholic Information Center of the Archdiocese of Washington and priest of the Prelature Opus Dei. Welcome to another episode of our EWTN series dedicated to exploring the life, work, and thought of the Venerable Cardinal John Henry Newman. Today's guest is Monsignor Richard Liddy. Monsignor Liddy is a priest of the Archdiocese of Newark. In addition to that, he's also the University Professor of Catholic Thought and Culture at a well-known Catholic university located in South Orange, New Jersey, Seton Hall University. He directs the Center for Catholic Studies at Seton Hall. And if that were not enough, he's also the Senior Fellow at the Woodstock Theological Center at Georgetown University. Monsignor Liddy is an experienced priest and Newman scholar. And he has also done his doctoral work on a well-known philosopher of this century, the Canadian Jesuit Bernard Lonergan, some of whose explorations in the theory of knowledge coalesce in one way or another with some of the thought of the Venerable John Henry Newman. Today he's going to speak to us on a topic that really goes to the very heart of what our series is all about, because it's not only about the work and the thought and the person of John Henry Newman, it's also on John Henry Newman as venerable. That is he a saint? Will he be beatified or canonized? What are his virtues that lead us to think that he is a man who's already sitting in God's presence? So I want to thank you, Monsignor Liddy, for being with us today, coming down on this short trip to Birmingham, Alabama, in order
nice to be
with
here.
Us. Well, I thought we could start off by, as we try and do in some of these episodes, to step back a little bit. Before we talk about the Venerable John Henry Newman as a possible saint, could you explain briefly the process that's involved in a juridical sense of the Church in a person being promoted for sainthood?
Well, it's actually been simplified in recent years from what it had mm-hmm. been, a juridical process. But it's basically the Church, rooted in the faith of the Church, that certain persons are worthy of our imitation and certain persons are with God in such a way that they can be and live their lives in such a way that they can be models for us. So now it begins with a diocese and a local church process, and I was very privileged to be part of that in Birmingham, England. A bishop collects the witnesses and checks the writings of someone like Cardinal Newman, finds out whether he had a reputation for sanctity and holiness, and it all comes together in a big book like this. Actually,
perhaps you could pick it up and show it to the viewer.
Two volumes of this. This is the what's called the Positio, and there's two volumes that emerge from the process in England, the historical process from the Diocese of Birmingham. And then this was sent to Rome to the Congregation for the Saints, and they voted on it. There's a process in Rome, and then it's sent to the Holy Father. And in 1991, John Henry Newman was declared a venerable, that he had lived his life in such a way that his virtues were heroic, and he's a candidate for beatification and canonization eventually.
When was the process initiated for John Henry Newman? We know that he died in 1890, and how many years or decades, and if it took a long time, why the delay?
Well, for one thing, there had been not much of a tradition in England for canonization mm-hmm. as there would be in Catholic countries, mm-hmm. in Italy, for example. So Newman was a bit of an anomaly in England and in English Catholicism. So I think that explains to some degree the delay. Many people, when he died in 1890, many people said this man was a saint, even people who were not Catholics. But the process began a little more formally in the 1940s and 1950s. Monsignor Davis from Birmingham was very influential and became the first one to be very active in the cause and collected the process became more and more formalized after that. And finally, Father Vincent Blail was made the postulator of the cause in 1978.
That recently,
yes. So this results from that most recent move for his canonization. But it's very interesting because it seems like as time goes on, there's more and more interest. It's not something that has faded away. Just the fact that you're doing this program shows that there is a slow, steady widening of interest and appreciation of Cardinal Newman.
Could you tell our viewers if there's been a particular interest during the pontificate of John Paul II in terms of devotion to or interest in the furthering of his cause?
Yes. As a matter of fact, the statements that the present Holy Father has made about Cardinal Newman are really amazing and wonderful. When he went to England soon after, I guess in the early 1980s.
This is the time of the Falklands War, if
that's
you might
right.
remember.
That's right, probably 82.
Mm-hmm.
He made a remarkable statement about Newman as a figure in ecumenism and bringing the churches together, as the Spirit of God was at work in this man. And so he has a real interest in Newman, and it seems to me a love of Newman.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure that it was something close to his heart when he was able to declare him venerable in 1991.
You mentioned that the declaration of his being venerable means that the church is saying this is a man who has lived, displayed the virtues in a heroic sort of way. He's lived them. And as such, I believe it would be understood that he is a man who's worthy of imitation.
Yes.
And so that is, we venerate him by imitating his virtues. In my experience of looking at some other of these positios, oftentimes they take them, they look at the theological virtues and the cardinal virtues. Could you explain a little bit how that you would approach that and how some of the things that might have struck you in particular about John Henry Newman?
Well, it is unique because he was such an intellectual man. The amount of writing that he did, and he was known as an intellectual in his time. And my degree is in philosophy, and he speaks to my heart as a thinker and as a theologian. But he, in the preparation for the canonization, they really look at, well, what is the central thrust of this man's life, and how did he live his life, and how was faith a guiding principle in his life, and humility and charity. And it's amazing to me, this particular volume of the Positio pulls together the witnesses of many, many people to his holiness. Even though he was a great intellectual, and we don't expect great intellectuals to be saints often, it seems to be that many people consider him a very, very holy man. And in that sense, he's talked about as possibly being named a doctor of the church. Pope Paul VI is supposed to have said to Jean Guiton, a French writer, be assured Newman will be named a doctor of the church, a teacher. And that's what he's been for me. You know.
Could you tell us, you worked on the historical commission. How many other people worked along with you?
I think there were about, Father Vincent Blail, and there was a small committee of three in England, but they had a number of theological censors, and I was one of those theological censors. We had to go through and read all the works of Newman, which was quite a task, and make a judgment, are these in conformity with the teachings of the church and nothing contrary to faith and morals. So I was given all the major philosophical and theological works, and someone else was too. They always have two people making the judgment on that. So there must have been maybe 12 people altogether, maybe not that many, maybe 8 or so, who were theological censors of the writings of Newman. I felt very unworthy to be put in that role, but at the same time it was a great privilege to me and a great enrichment for me to go through all of his works in that way and to be able to write something on them.
Mm-hmm. So. Now, as you went over the writings, and not too many people can say they've basically read every word of the Venerable John Henry Newman, so I don't know if there's any viewers out there can say that. I certainly can't. What surprised you in reading it through in that way, looking at him as with the idea of his possibly being a person worthy of not only veneration, but being raised to the altars as a saint someday?
Well, quite honestly, I think it was his humility. Mm. He's a brilliant man. You mentioned before, Father Lonergan said that his basic mentor was John Henry Newman, and he was a mentor in terms of philosophical and the workings of the mind and the spirit and so forth. So I was caught up in Newman's writings because of his philosophical and theological. He helped me find my way through the 1960s and all the difficulties in the church and so forth, a real inspiration. But in all of his writings, I think what surprised me as I went over it with this in mind of His Holiness, in all of his writings, he basically says, I might be wrong. I submit myself to the judgment of the church, and I put it in God's... I do my writing and my thinking and my philosophizing in the sight of God, and I submit to the judgment of the church. And so that really struck me very forcibly.
I imagine what would expect you to be the disjunction between being an intellectual and at the same time being humble. I mean, unfortunately, perhaps that's not found as often as it should be in people who are great thinkers.
Well, he was convinced that real love of God can lead you to be clear in your thinking and to think as clearly as you can about the issues of the day. And I think that's for me, is one of the virtues of Newman, is that his holiness, and I'm sure you've talked a lot about his first conversion when he was a young man, but that sort of falling in love with God as a young man led him to think in wider and wider circles and more nuanced ways about history and about what was going on. So his holiness and his thinking, they merge. And I think that's why he's a wonderful model for our age.
In prior episodes of this series, we've talked about that fundamental notion, which is so widespread today from the Council and John Paul II, which Cardinal Newman certainly recognized the reality that all of us are called to holiness by the sacraments of initiation, baptism, and the confirmation, Eucharist, right, and so on. I'm sure all of our viewers who are wanting are all people who are interested in sanctity themselves, and precisely talking about what we're talking about here. However, all of us realize, those of us sitting here and those who are watching and participating in our discussion, that we also are people who have defects, faults, and all can be classified in one way or another as sinners. I'd like to bring up that question in regards to Cardinal Newman, because he is a person who, on account of his writings, certainly, and also I think in a certain sense because of his modernity, we know an awful lot about him. He's a modern man in many ways, even though a Victorian. In comparison to most saints or well-known people, he's quite known. And there are not accusations, that's not the word I would use, but criticisms about his peevishness or his moodiness or sharpness or resentment or lack of forgiveness. Now, you can put his holiness, which has been declared by the church very clearly because his heroic virtues would be venerated, but where do his defects and faults, where do they fit into this process?
Well, they're part of his life. I mean, he was a human being, and I think I was struck in the Positio by some of the testimonies that people made. They said he was a real human being. He could speak to me.
He was authentic.
He was authentic. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't say that he was right in every area or he was not sensitive. He had a very sensitive spirit. Some people talked about it. A certain feminine quality to him at the same time as a very, very, you might say, masculine quality.
Straightforward.
Straightforward and speaking up when no one
Courage.
He had courage, the courage of his convictions. Mm. And so I say to myself when I hear some of these criticisms, I say in some ways, so what? He might have had his defects. I know we all have our defects. And that's why he wanted a church. That's why he sought the church, mm-hmm. and a community. And he had disagreements with people in the church, very serious disagreements, but he kept quiet for many years and was able to see a role for patience in his own living. And how to respond to that? I say he's a human being. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I find he was a very holy human being that mm-hmm. always, I guess what he sought was the light of God in each situation, and sought to follow that, the light of the Holy Spirit in each situation, and it's evident in his writings and his teachings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In terms of this positio, this document we're referring to, which was submitted by this historical commission to the Holy See, obviously you could not interview anyone who actually knew Newman. There was no one alive at the time.
There are some people, when this began, there are interviews with people from the early part of the 19th century.
Who had actually...
Who knew him, or their father knew him.
And mm-hmm.
They knew him as that holy priest over on Hagley Road. And so there are some testimonies to people who knew him personally.
In the positio, do you have a good number of letters, for example, of people who hadn't met him in years and talked about his evidence? In other words, could you tell us a little bit about, in the time remaining, about the reputation he had for holiness during his life?
Well, there's a wonderful... Yes, he, toward the end of his life, people wrote testimonies to his holiness, and even when he was... the day of his funeral, The Times of London had a wonderful statement about whether or not he's canonized by the Church of Rome.
As if it was a possibility.
Certainly canonized in the hearts of thousands of English people of many creeds, which was quite a testimony. And there are a number of those that have been collected from the time of his own lifetime, mm-hmm. who believed in his holiness. There's a certain mystery about Newman, and as you read about him, you sense that people pick up on that. There's as much as you read about him, you cannot comprehend him without realizing there's a holiness about him.
Mm-hmm. And a unique holiness is something yes. different in many ways.
Yes, yes.
In the last few years, we've seen the beatification of or canonization of people like Edith Stein or Maximilian Kolbe or most recently Padre Pio. And of course, each saint is different by the very mm-hmm. nature of things, but Newman seems to have even more mysteriousness than these do.
Very interesting that Edith Stein translated into German a number of Newman's sermons
mm-hmm.
and thought very highly of Newman. And
well, Monsignor Liddy, for the interest of our viewers who are, I hope, becoming increasingly fascinated with Cardinal Newman as they watch this series, what do we have to do to put him over the top? I mean, what's the next step in order to bring, in God's providence, the Venerable John Henry Newman to the next step of beatification and then on to canonization?
Well, the technical requirement is one miracle for someone to be beatified and then a miracle for someone to be canonized.
Now, so a miracle after the beatification?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And that's understood as a physical miracle. Now, a lot of people today, people do pray to Newman. They pray to him for financial difficulties. They pray to him for all kinds of physical problems. If you read his life, you see that he was involved in a lot of things. But many people say the moral miracle that is his life and the numbers of people that have been converted by just reading his writings, converted either from... a lukewarm Catholicism or Christianity to a deeper commitment to Christ, or converted from unbelief to belief in Christ, it forms a certain moral miracle that to me is very, very powerful.
Have there been any physical miracles that have at least been reported and then discounted?
Yes, there have been. I'm not familiar with those, but I know there have been.
Because a physical miracle has to be something that there can be no other explanation, correct?
Yes, although doctors today, they certainly wouldn't declare something a miracle. They'll say something.
It's unexplainable.
Certain condition, and I can't explain it from the medical knowledge. So you look at it as a sign of God's hand in the whole thing. So
you would suggest to our viewers that they continue to pray to Cardinal Newman for all their needs one sort or another. But at the same time, if they come across a situation, whether it's in their family or friends, that seems hopeless, that they might pray to him and him alone and asking for that divine intervention through the intercession. Because after all, when we pray to the Venerable John Henry, we're not praying to him to do it. We're praying to him his power of intercession, shows precisely that he is blessed and that he is a saint.
That's right. It's as if God's blessing. And I find myself praying to him. And I know there are many testimonies of people that do pray.
And to our viewers, Monsignor Liddy is not only a university professor, but he spent time as a rector of a seminary. So you can be sure he's had, one time or another, many things that he's had to ask the Venerable John Henry's intercession about.
A lot to pray for.
including vocations, which hopefully all of us are praying for to Venerable John Henry Newman. Now, the Pope, of course, has, we could say, a lot of power. In fact, absolute power in a certain sense inside the Church. If he so desired, it's within his power to say in the year 2000 or 2001, on the bicentenary of John Henry Newman's birth, that he waives the miracle requirement. He has done that in the past, evidently.
Yes, he can certainly do it with regard to martyrs, and he's done it with regard to people who have suffered physical martyrdom.
Mm-hmm.
He's not done it to others. So he could do it, and some people have expected that the present Holy Father would have done it by now, but for some reason or other, he has not. So just patience.
Could you give us, in the few minutes remaining, aside from humility, what some of the other particular virtues that impressed you or attract you, and maybe some examples of?
Well, I think, yes, as I say, I think his holiness in my life is as a teacher, and it certainly his broadness of mind. You spoke before about his, long before Vatican II, the sense of the faith of all the people of God, and he wrote an article called On Consulting the Faithful. And so he had a sense of the laity and the importance of the laity in the world today, and a sense of what modern philosophies and modern culture demand of us. So I think that openness, it's an openness to God, but it was also an openness to what God is doing in the world and in the Church. So that for me is a very, very important dimension of his holiness, and that separated him from a lot of his contemporaries, and he suffered a great deal from that, but he kept to the path that God was leading him on.
He was a man who lived poverty. He was abstemious in his habits. He was a person also in his pastoral work as a priest, very priestly in that in administering the sacraments, he spent long hours hearing confessions. Is that correct?
That's right. He took care of the regular pastoral duties in the church at Birmingham, and was called one time. There was a plague in a nearby area, and he and some priests went there to serve the people in the plague. So he was a man that
gave of himself easily when he could have said, I am what is referred to as the father in the oratory, in his case, a founder of an oratory.
That's right. Yes.
He did not absent himself from doing the common things. He took his turn.
That's right.
Another expression of humility, I imagine.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes.
Wonderful. Well, I just wanted to, in summing up, want to ask you if to give us an idea, and hopefully we can pass this on to the viewers, if they were able to report favors, is there any particular place they should write to?
Well, the Oratory in Birmingham is the center.
On Hagley Road?
On Hagley Road.
We'll try and get this address at one point for our viewers and put it on the screen.
Father Gregory Winterton is the father, mm-hmm. and Father Vincent Blail is the postulator of the cause. So if people would write to the Oratory in Birmingham, England, I think that would be the place, and they have a lot of written materials there and books. And
very quickly, because we have to finish, the biography to read on Newman as a saint?
Well, of course, Ian Carr's masterful work is a wonderful work. I also liked Sheridan Gilley's work very much.
Good.
It gives a sense of his.
Remember those two names, Sheridan Gilley, and our welcome and frequent guest, Father Ian Carr. Thank you, Monsignor Liddy, for coming down from beautiful New Jersey and down to Alabama and telling us about Newman the Saint, which is at the very heart of our series. I also want to thank you, the viewers, for being with us on this series. We welcome you back as we continue along examining Newman in the year 2000, his person, his work, and his influence. Thank you.